I want you to imagine that you're standing on a footbridge which crosses Holyhead Harbour. In front of you is the open sea, and you can see the old customs house and the Admiralty Arch. To your left, you've got the old medieval church of St. Cubby. Behind you were the remains of what was called the Station Hotel, which is a grand building where people stayed. If you look to the right, you'll see, if you look very carefully, the ghost of a little boy flitting in around the platforms and taking numbers of trains. Seems very anarchy when you look back to it. And this little boy would spend his summer doing that. He would take these trains. The drivers knew him. They would invite him to come on board the footplate, and he would be driven up and down the station and turning engines around. And he was just part of that. And he also spent his time with his grandfather, because his grandfather was a man who was a storyteller. And they would go to the allotment together. And he would tell of the time when he worked on the ships. He ran away to sea when he was 14, my grandfather, and sailed from a place called Kemmice Bay to the Isle of Man and to Sulloth in Cumberland. And after we'd been to the allotment, we'd come back to a place which was called Penrast, which were two benches. And on the two benches, these old men would sit. And my grandfather would sit with them, and I would sit on the floor, and they would just tell their stories. And they had names, which you don't hear anywhere else. There was a man called Griff II. He was called Griff II because he'd served in the Navy, and he kept saying "aye aye" when he meant yes. And there was John Van, who drove a horse and cart delivering stuff from the station. And these were real stories. They wore the clothes that they'd worn when they were working on the railway. They all had their peak caps and their what they called jancies, which were close-knit jumpers with BR written in red on them. And they'd kept them all these years after they'd retired, but they still looked like that. One story they told was an incredible one, that even into the 1950s, there was a ceremony, and my father had been part of this. When he took a train down to London, there was a ceremony. The station master at Euston would come forward with a box and hand it to my father or the other guards, and the box had to be looked at, and inside was a watch, and the guard had to put the time on his own watch to be exactly the same as the time on this watch. And the watch was carried to Holyhead, and the station master in Holyhead would then check that his watch was saying the same thing, and then they would put it on board the mail boat. It would be carried to Ireland. The station master in Dunleary would check it, that it was saying the same time, and it would go across to Dublin. And this happened every single day. Now, this started in 1850, because you couldn't run a railway without a timetable. And the only way you could have a timetable would be to have everybody having the same time. But if you depended on the sun coming up, then it didn't work. So they carried this watch across. And so to a certain extent, you could argue that Holyhead controlled time itself, which is quite an incredible idea. But the fact that for 100 years, that ceremony continued, even though there was radio, even though there were telegraphs, even though there was even television by then, they still had this ceremony of transferring the watch and making sure that the time in Dublin was exactly the same as the time in Holyhead, and the time in Holyhead was the same as the time as it was on Big Ben in London.